Welcome to Red Meat, the conservative news update you need from Odyssey stations across the country. This is the place where we're not afraid to dig in. While the left is fixated on the White House ballroom, the Supreme Court is toiling away on decisions that could actually affect us all. Here's Shannon Bream, host of Fox News Sunday on Mark Cox's show.
Is this a big day in D.C.? Are you headed over to the Supreme Court soon?
Yes, we're still waiting on some pretty significant stuff, birthright citizenship, trans athletes in high school sports, you know, a lot of things measuring the stretch or the boundary of the president's executive power on the ability to fire and people like Fed board governors. And so there's a lot we're still waiting on.
So let's talk about that birthright decision for just a minute. Is that a decision that's black or white, or could the Supreme Court find some gray area within that?
I think that they took the case to give a definitive answer, and I think that's what we're going to get. I don't think the president's going to like it based on the arguments where he was sitting a few rows away from me during those arguments. It's just a really heavy lift for the administration. I think that the advocates in the case did a great job on both sides. But man, the justices, nearly every single one of them had real skepticism, really tough questions about what the president is asking them to do.
Right, right. Well, the Voting Rights Act decision obviously had a lot of repercussions across the country, not the least of which, I mean, in Virginia now, they got overturned by their state Supreme Court, and they've appealed that to the U.S. Supreme Court. How quickly might we hear a decision on that?
I really think within a day or two is possible, because it's really a stretch for the Democrats in Virginia who are pushing this to an emergency stay at the Supreme Court. You know, the case was completely argued on state grounds. It was about interpretation of the state constitution and whether or not they followed the proper procedure in getting that referendum onto the ballot. So it's a really heavy lift to argue that it's now somehow a federal case. Although they're attempting to do that, saying the court got it so egregiously wrong and there is federal election law involved. But there wasn't in the case. It was a state question. So my gut says that the Supreme Court pretty quickly turns it away. And within the next day or two, I would imagine.
You know, aside from what's going on with the Supreme Court, the other big thing that everyone's talking about is President Trump's visit right now to Beijing. And I know he and President Xi have been meeting, and it seems like trade is the big, you know, focus there right now of that summit. And I found it very interesting that he brought along Elon Musk and was at the CEO of NVIDIA. To Beijing.
Right. Yeah, there are several business leaders the president brought along with him. And I think, you know, wanted to show up to say, listen, I've got the best and brightest and biggest minds in business with me, because it's critical that we have understandings with China about a lot of big trade issues. And so it's almost like he brought his own posse. You know, it's got a show of force with him to show up there in China. And both sides have talked about how trade's a huge issue. But China's, you know, they're not letting up on the Taiwan issue and signaling very much that's still front and center for them as an issue that they want to discuss with President Trump. But they talked about fentanyl, all kinds of trade of agriculture and those kinds of things. And, of course, the Strait of Hormuz.
Yeah, high stakes here, Shannon, right? Because they could apply some pressure to Iran if they wanted to. Aren't they still shipping? Aren't they still getting some supplies from Iran, like by rail?
Well, and they are able to get some things moving around. We know that there are some other Asian interests that are moving through the strait as well.
Yeah.
And China, you know, it's got its own relationship with Iran that doesn't always benefit us or the rest of the world. And, you know, there were reports last week that, you know, the Chinese Communist Party told its firms operating within China to ignore the U.S. sanctions that we've got with respect to Iran. So they're very much signaling that they have their own track and their own relationships and don't necessarily feel the need to go along with the U.S. pressure campaign.
All right. I need to ask you a Washington, D.C. question, since you since you live and work there all the time. How much of a problem is the reflecting pool? Because, you know, here in the middle of the country, we're seeing you know, the artist's rendering of what it'll look like if it looks like a swimming pool. I've walked past it many times when I've been there, and it's all been kind of dirty and murky and not real attractive. Is there no middle ground here? Everybody seems to be against this.
Yeah, and I've got a friend who runs that route. She's a really serious runner, and she runs by there every day. So she gives us her own updates. She takes, you know, photos for us and texts it out to our group text so we can see what's going on. But the fact is, you know, they're telling us that it's so broken. And as you said, it could be prettier. It's been kind of a mess, that it's leaking 40,000 gallons of water a day, which sounds crazy. But that's, you know, that's one of the representations that's being made. And you know what? What Secretary Burgum is saying is, listen, we're repairing it. We're painting it, and it's going to be beautiful. It's supposed to be a reflecting pool, and they're doing this at a fraction of the cost of one of the big estimates that came in. So if they can get it done under budget, on time, or early, and people think it looks pretty, I think this conversation will go away. But, you know, I don't know that it's the best, you know, way of tackling this. I don't know. I'm not a construction person or a pool person. I do love a pool, but I don't think anyone's going to be swimming in that reflecting pond anytime soon.
I joke that since Trump loves to stir the pot, he should just have, you know, his name put at the bottom of it. So when you look in, you can't avoid it. That's something
that
Trump would do.
Would cause a different level of meltdown here in D.C., sponsored by Trump Enterprises.
Yeah, now, there you go.
We don't see any logos or insignia there, but I'll take a little jog by there this weekend myself and check it out.
Is there anything you can't sue over? Like, they've sued to stop the ballroom. Mm-hmm. They're trying to sue to stop him from fixing the reflecting pond. It's crazy.
Yeah, and listen, some of it is just you're going to be against President Trump no matter what if you're one of his political opponents. But you even got Senator Fetterman out there like, get over the TDS. It's a reflecting pool. It's going to be nice. Try to be supportive on things that are not, you know, sort of life and death. So we'll see.
That is never going to happen. Shannon, we'll be watching this weekend. Thank you.
While the Supreme Court works on domestic decisions, President Donald Trump is meeting with China. So what's going on there? Here's Mark Reardon.
Gordon Chang is my guest right now, nationally recognized China expert. He is the author of the best-selling book, Plan Red, China's Project to Destroy America. What do you have as a takeaway from day one? And some of this, because of the time zone difference, is a little hard to kind of get your arms around right now. And these are big, important meetings with two of the biggest leaders on the planet. But before we get into some of the warnings that you're going to share about China, what would you say about the meetings and the summit right now?
Well, so far, Xi Jinping has been very brazen, and he disrespected President Trump. And I've never actually seen something like this. In their remarks Thursday, today, or there yesterday, mm-hmm. Xi Jinping referred to the Thucydides trap, which is ancient Greece. It talks about how a declining ruling power will challenge a rising power and perhaps cause a war. And essentially what Xi Jinping was saying to President Trump while he was right there in the same room was, you're the leader of a declining country, a failing state. And so this was something that I hope that President Trump will push back on, because this was just unacceptable.
Well, I thought so, too. We talked about that a little bit earlier with my friend Charles Lipson from the University of Chicago. But was it a moment that, because I haven't seen that moment, I've heard the reporting about it. Did it catch the administration Trump off guard? And you would think he's not one to just sit there and take it when someone says something like that to him, right?
No, Trump isn't someone like that. And eventually, I'm sure that Trump is one way or another going to get even. We didn't see Trump's reaction because the cameras were on mm-hmm. Xi Jinping. But clearly, Trump could not have been happy about this.
But he also seems to really like Xi. He relishes in this moment, I think, Gordon. So what are the realistic expectations that come out of this? I guess we can start with economically and then maybe get to militarily with Taiwan. But what would your expectations be as they wrap this thing up?
Most everybody says, and I think that it's right, that they will extend the trade truce, the one that was negotiated between Trump and Xi in Busan, South Korea, last October. So that makes some sense because it's really important to Xi Jinping and it's important to Trump. So that probably will occur. There might be some other things that occur or result from this. So we'll just have to see. And, you know, we won't really know for quite some time until we see whether the promises have been carried out.
Do you think there is, like, let's just talk about the strait right now, because obviously China is helping Iran. They need the oil, though, that comes through the strait. You would think that there would be some sort of certainly discussion about that, but maybe an agreement on that or not?
Well, yes. And the readout from the White House was that Xi Jinping wants to help President Trump open the strait, and he does not want Iran to have a nuclear weapon.
But we got to remember that the reason why we have a war in the first place is because China helped Iran develop its nuclear weapons program by transferring materials, equipment, technology, both directly and indirectly. And unfortunately, this has occurred since the Clinton administration, at least probably before that, going back to maybe the 1970s. But we didn't know about it until maybe the Clinton administration. But no American president has actually called out the Chinese for doing that. And we need to start doing that because China, with its propaganda, has been criticizing the U.S. for the war. Well, we need to say, well, yeah, there is a war, but it's because you made it inevitable, China.
Gordon Chang is with me. He has a best-selling book out called Plan Red, China's Project to Destroy America. Look, that those are pretty strong words, to destroy America. What are you talking about there, Gordon?
Well, in May 2019, People's Daily, which is the most authoritative publication in China, carried a landmark editorial that declared a, quote, people's war on us. We Americans may just sort of dismiss that as propaganda, but people's war has a great resonance for the Communist Party. And in fact, in March of 2023, PLA Daily, which is the main propaganda organ of the Chinese military, actually defined people's war as total war. And yes, China is conducting a total war against the United States, whether we're talking about all of these agents and operatives planting bombs in our country or the biological weapons facilities that we have discovered that would belong to China on American soil, or whether we're just talking fentanyl. So, yes.
Well, I mean, just like I know that that topic had to come up as well, because they're still supplying a lot of those chemicals that, you know, add to this crisis here in this country. Do you, because one of the things that was discussed recently when we were talking about birthright citizenship, and I can't remember what the, I think it was called something that related to birthright tourism, because you have a lot of Chinese nationals that have come here to this country, born, they have citizenship, they go back to China. This sounds somewhat conspiratorial, but I don't think it is. And then they come back into this country. Is that something you cover in the book?
No, I didn't. This Peter Schweitzer wrote about this. Mostly, when Chinese do this, they do it because they want to get out of China. They want to have want to live in a free society. What Peter was talking about, though, is something which is sinister, and that is perhaps the Communist Party, but certainly people producing babies on a mass scale, growing them like we saw in the Matrix movie, and then having them go back to China, become indoctrinated, and then come back into the United States as agents of the Communist Party. So that is a very different thing. And that is something that Peter started to talk about, because we've only had evidence of that for the last couple of years.
You cover, there was a hearing yesterday with Rand Paul's committee in the Senate on Capitol Hill dealing with COVID. You cover COVID-19 and China's role in that in the book, Gordon.
Yes. And what we learned from that hearing was, that, and we knew this before, but this hearing documented it, that Anthony Fauci purposely covered up his funding of the Wuhan Institute of Virology. You know, we've known this for quite some time because there are actually two scientific papers that were published in 2016 and 2017 by researchers at the Wuhan Institute of Virology discussing gain of function research, and specifically acknowledging funding from Dr. Fauci's National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases. Now, on May 11th, the statute of limitations expired for Fauci's perjury before Rand Paul's Senate committee.
I didn't know that. That's interesting.
Yeah, the Justice Department let it pass. This was a clear case of perjury. Now, what Fauci did was he evaded President Obama's 2014 moratorium on the funding of gain-of-function research in the United States. He was absolutely determined to do that research, so he funded it in the Wuhan Institute, which is a Chinese biological weapons lab. Now, that may not have constituted a federal crime, I'm not sure, but perjury certainly did. And the Justice Department should have prosecuted him for perjury because it was a clear case. Now, I actually think that statute of limitations may expire on July 10th, because Fauci submitted a statement to the Senate on that, and he reaffirmed his position that he did not fund gain-of-function research in the Wuhan Institute. So I think that they probably could get him, And I really disappointed at the Justice Department for not even trying.
Yeah, that is disappointing. And I think I was unaware of that. Gordon Chang is here. His book is called Plan Red. Let's get to Taiwan and the realities of this. Because, look, I've covered these geopolitical issues. I'm not an expert at all, but we've talked about, you know, the invasion of Taiwan for a long time. We know that militarily the threat is out there. China's being very clear, I think, in its goals. How does the U.S. manage that issue? I know in the book you're talking about maybe a fundamental rethink of our policy, but on Taiwan in particular, how do you handle that topic?
Yeah, I think that the United States needs to drop its policy of strategic ambiguity and move to one of clarity. Our policy right now is to tell neither Beijing nor Taipei what we would do if the use of force looked imminent. And we developed this policy when it looked like both Mao Zedong of Communist China and Chiang Kai-shek of Taiwan were likely to invade each other. But now, of course, there's no threat of Taiwan invading the mainland. But there is a real threat of Communist China invading Taiwan. And I think we need to be clear. We need to be clear because if we do that, the Chinese won't invade. They'll huff and they'll puff and they'll get enraged, but they won't do anything, I believe, for a number of reasons. And we can actually stop the Chinese from thinking about invading by being very clear about what we would do.
But we don't, you know, Trump kind of likes to cozy up here a little bit. We don't seem as forceful as maybe we should be in that situation.
Correct. As a matter of fact, Biden was better than Trump on Taiwan because Biden on four occasions actually said he would defend Taiwan militarily. So that was much clearer. Now, unfortunately, during the Biden administration, his subordinates undermined him by clarifying his remarks and saying, that was not U.S. policy. But the point is, the president of the United States makes policy, and Biden mm-hmm. did. And what we had was essentially a constitutional coup. Now, Biden was so out of it that may not have understood what his subordinates were doing. But this was a challenge to presidential authority, the likes of which we have not seen in a very long time.
Well, what is the situation? You know, it's so hard to really kind of tell, and I could say this is true certainly in Ukraine and Israel across the planet, where you don't really know exactly what's going on because, you know, these situations are complicated. These countries are very, very large as well. But in the situation with China economically, do we have an idea? We're suffering from inflation here. Obviously, we get a lot of products from China. There's the trade issues that are being discussed. What's the economy in China, the effect of normal people, whoever they might be in China, economically right now?
It is very bad. China reported 5.0% gross domestic product growth in the first quarter. It was nowhere near that. Now, nobody this side of heaven really knows China's GDP right. growth number, and it could even have been negative. But we do know that whatever growth there was really factory production for exports, which really doesn't benefit the most people. And the problem here is that Xi Jinping has turned his back on consumption as the primary basis of growth of the Chinese economy. So, for instance, in the U.S., 68, 69, 70% of GDP growth is attributable to consumption. In China, the comparable number is about 38 or 39%. China's the lowest number or among the lowest numbers in the world because he's purposely kept money out of the hands of the Chinese people. So you have a very poor economy. All of it is, or most of it is attributed to the factory sector. And so Chinese people are suffering, which is the reason why the Chinese people, many of them, are gloomy, opting out of society or trying to leave the country altogether by, for instance, coming across our southern border.
And they have 1.4 billion people in that country, 1.4 billion.
That
stunning.
Is the official number. Some people
think
say
it's higher?
Really 1.3 billion.
Oh, a little bit lower. That's still pretty high number, though, right?
It is. And what's really interesting is that by the turn of the century, China will probably have something like 450, 500 million, maybe a little bit more. But they will lose at least half, and they'll probably lose two-thirds of their population when the clock ticks 2100.
Here's more from Tara Servatius on Trump and China.
Texter writes, "Hey, Tara, I was listening to your recap of Trump's trip to China. Is your assessment that the trip is good, bad, or it's too soon to tell?" Too soon to tell. But I will tell you this, tactically, Trump has China's back against the wall. And I was saying, look, She was absolutely trashing Trump behind his back, literally in the same room as Trump, as Trump has only talked positively about him, saying America's weak, China's ascendant. Really, buddy? Looks like we control your oil. That's what it looks like to me. Trump's got him totally surrounded. Took the Venezuelan oil, took the Russian oil, took the Iranian oil. How did he take the Russian oil? We put it back on the market. By the way, do you hear what Marco Rubio was saying? I meant to tell you this earlier. This is the good news. You know, Trump was asked. And by the way, John Fetterman just trashed the mainstream media and said, you know that clip where Trump's saying, I don't care about the financial situation of Americans? Yeah, they cut the beginning of it off. The part where Trump's asked about Iran, and he starts with Iran can't have a nuclear weapon, because he's asked if he considers that. And then he says, I can't take that into consideration, Americans' financial situation. Well, Rubio's been out there saying, look, the reason they don't seem worried about it is they know that the oil price situation is going to get much better. I mean, Russia's at almost 300,000 additional barrels on the world market right now. They've ramped up in recent weeks. They can go to 13 million, full stop. It may take them a year to do it, but I'm thinking they're going to be at least a million barrels, if not two, by Election Day on the world market. That is oil they're not going to sell to China. Because before, China was getting it for like 60 cents on the dollar because it was sanctioned oil, right? And they're sneaking it out to back doors. That's got a lot of other extra costs too. So Russia loses money. Russia's not going to sell to China. Not when they can get full price in the world market. He took all three. That was their big manufacturing advantage. Buy the Venezuelan oil that you use to make those plastics in your factories at pennies on the dollar. Well, we said, no, you can't have it. We're going to take it. It's going to our refineries. That's why Trump emphasized, where will China be going to buy this oil, assuming this deal goes through? Our Gulf refineries. What's there? The oil we took from them is the Venezuelan oil. We're refining it now. They will be buying it for dollars, which they hate, but they'll be paying full prices like everybody else on Earth. What does that do? Guts their advantage over our manufacturers. So if you look at what Trump's doing on the board, I think the way he thinks is, oh, she's my best friend. I love China. Have I told you how great of friends me and she are? We just love each other. Why? Because he's got China pretty choked back right now. I mean, they're in a world of hurt. What's she saying? She is in the same room as Trump, giving interviews where he's saying China's ascendant, America's in decline, America's weak. And he's talking almost in war terms, like, we might be in war in the future. Actually, he said that when you translate it. Which one of those two you think's winning? Just human nature. Looks like she's trying to buck up for his people and show them, I've got this guy under control. Well, if you look at the pieces on the board and not listen to what Trump is saying, which is quite frankly a vomit reel, because I hate China, would I have gone? No. Do we know all the details yet? No. So to answer your question, look, I'm just laying the chess pieces out. I'll call balls and strikes later. I don't have all the details. But in terms of what is actually happening, that's it. I mean, did you listen to Trump say, oh, well, no, I can't turn the Chinese students away? Sean Hannity looks horrified. He said that would be an insult to China. I would never do that. Laura Ingraham's going wild, but look what he's doing. Headline, alarmed headline in India. Student visas down 20% to American universities in a single year. Why? Trump administration policies. And the Times of India reports in alarm that the Trump crackdown on those visas is getting even worse. They think the numbers will be bigger next year. See? Listen to what Trump's saying. You want to vomit? We hate China. What is he doing, though? The opposite of what he's saying. Look. You can like that, not like that. I'm just laying it all out on the table. You do with it what you want. I don't think we have the full story yet. Me, like I said, I would never have gone to China. I would make Xi come to me, but Xi will never come to him. That would be a humiliation. Wasn't it a humiliation when we go to Xi? I didn't like the look of it, but that's where we are. So good, bad, not, I don't know. I'll tell you later. We'll figure it out as we go. Meanwhile, folks, watch this Spencer Pratt race. You know what's crazy about it? He's running for mayor, just the mayorship of LA, right? The left is at the point, because, 25% of them say violence is okay if I don't like, who's in charge, even if I lost the election, like, legitimately. Do you know Spencer Pratt has gotten so many murder threats from these leftist loons that he's now had to move out of that trailer that he lives in on his burnt out property where Democrats allowed the fire and then won't give the permit to rebuild? Yeah, it's because they're trying to seize the land. They're trying to take the rich off their land. They're trying to kill Spencer Pratt. He has to have a security team. Just to run a standard political campaign for mayor. Now, let me ask you something. We got Democrats running in this state, right? I mean, LA's deep blue territory, right? We got Democrats running in this state, deep red territory. Do they need security teams? Do they have to move out of their homes? because we're trying to kill them? No. No, they don't. But we've seen this in case after case. I mean, when you look at who's going to come home from that China trip, who's coming home? Rubio has to live on a military base or they'll kill him and his family because he's had so many death threats. Who's living on that military base? Stephen Miller and his family. Why? They don't want to die. Kristi Noem, when she was head of Department of Homeland Security, she had to move out of her apartment, which she still kept paying for, and move on to a military base. Why? She don't want to die. Tom Homan, where does he live? Military base. Military base. Think about that.
Speaking of Marco Rubio, here's something from Bob Rose you may not have known.
Time now for the smoking gun. Secretary of State Marco Rubio has technically been banned from visiting China by its communist government. But yet, he was with President Trump and he's there right now. Well, you know, he had some outspoken things to say about the Uyghur Muslims that occupy East Turkestan as part of China, and he spoke out about human rights violations on the part of the Chinese. Well, they put him on the bad boy list. But then the Chinese government realized its travel ban on him would become politically awkward as he would be with the president on this visit. So basically, they changed the spelling of his name and acted as though he became a different person when he left the Senate to work for the second Trump administration.
Wow.
That seems a bit odd, but that is your smoking gun. It's a happy hump day, Trump day, with one of the top stories, of course, President Trump with President Xi. And that's one of the things I wanted to talk to our congresswoman about. So without further ado, Congresswoman Kat Kamick, what are the positives? What are you hopeful of that the outcome would be with this meeting?
Well, obviously, there's a longstanding history of American presidents meeting with China, and I think in this case with President Trump, he is a master when it comes to negotiation. And so he's not going to have the wool pulled over his eyes, let's say. We know that China does not negotiate in good faith. President Trump knows that. His team knows that. And so while this is certainly very important that they're sitting down discussing major issues, I mean, we have the world superpower, the United States, and China, which is doing anything and everything they can to catch up, which means in their case, espionage, stealing, IP. I mean, they are trying to embed themselves in every aspect of our economy and the global economy to assert their dominance. We know that. We have an absolute responsibility to curb that and stay one step ahead. So I know for us on Capitol Hill, we're very anxiously and very carefully closely watching what developments are happening because there's a lot riding on these meetings and these negotiations.
I totally agree with you, and I know you went to the War College, so I know you know a lot more than I do about asymmetrical warfare, and I'm glad you didn't go into the whole list of what China's been doing, because we only have a few minutes for the interview. But yes, I am glad that you're one of the people that fully realizes the degree of the threat and the many and varied ways in which they're trying to undermine us every day.
Every single day, every 2 hours, just for example, every 2 hours, the Chinese government, through their agents, are stealing, just in agriculture, either research, seeds, buying up our property, our ag land, in the agricultural sphere. Every 2 hours, China is committing a crime. Just in agriculture. That, I mean, of course, doesn't even begin to touch our financial systems, our telecommunications, our defense. I mean, you can go through the entire list, like you said, and we would never even really get to the bottom of how fully embedded they are. Not to mention the Chinese spy that was a mayor up until a few days ago in California, an actual Chinese agent. Absolutely insane.
Thank you, dear leader, I think is how she closed one of her emails with the people that were feeding her propaganda. Yeah, that is another incredible story, but we have to believe it these days. Hey, let me ask you this, you know, just in general, I know there's been specifics, like Senator Mark Kelly came out and basically said, our stockpile's depleted, it'll take us years to get all this back in line, basically giving aid and comfort to the enemy. There was another senator came out and said, oh, we've made Iran two or three times stronger than it was previous. They're making these ridiculous statements, but that's used as propaganda, you know, against our efforts there by the Iranian regime. In fact, what are your thoughts?
I mean, statements like that are so asinine, and I just wish that they had enough self-awareness to realize what exactly you just said. They are using American representatives' statements as a way to bolster their own efforts. It's so sad that we have people who are serving in Congress today that would rather see our country fail than see President Trump succeed. That is Trump derangement syndrome on steroids. They are case in point, and I hope years from now in a textbook when they have TDS officially adopted into the dictionary, that there is a picture of Mark Kelly and a few others that I could point out that says that this is what happens. It is a mental illness that you are so blinded with hate that you are willing to sacrifice your own country's success. And in this case, we're seriously engaged in very, very intense conflict. They're putting American servicemen and women in jeopardy as a result.
Totally agree with that, 100%.
Thank you for listening to Red Meat, a collection of conservative audio from Odyssey's talk stations across the country. This is the place where we're not afraid to dig in, listen wherever you get podcasts, and smash that subscribe button.